Sometimes it looks like I'm listening, but I'm drifting off, worried about other things. I heard mention of it, I'm sure, but I'd love it if you'd refresh my memory. Heather tilted her head.
It's a lease for a retail space on Key Street?
She said it slowly, as if Tara were a troublesome child. And my uncle wanted to rent this space?
I already told you. He didn't come to me personally.
I understand.
I said we needed Johnny's signature. But yours will do, seeing as how you're an owner.
She returned a smile.
Unless those are just rumours.
Tara was not going to confirm nor deny.
Did you ever talk to Johnny about this?
She shook her head.
This all happened the day before he went missing.
The day before?
I was first contacted a few weeks prior. I'm not saying there's any correlation between the events. I'm only stating that we were waiting for very specific spots. This is the first opening in a high traffic area, not far from here.
Had Danny mentioned this to Johnny? Or maybe Johnny had found out and...
Danny kills Emmett?
No. None of this made any sense.
I'd like to see the space first, Tara said. Of course.
She opened a drawer and removed a set of keys.
Are you ready to brave the rain again?
After you. As they neared the space for rent, Tara had to admit that Danny had picked the perfect location. Sandwiched between a pub and a gift shop. It had a green door with a gorgeous lion's head knocker, and the facade was limestone. Tara could already see a sign hanging above, Irish Revivals. 500 square feet of open space lay before her, and every inch looked usable. A decorator's dream. French doors along the back wall led to a small garden. A fireplace accented the back wall. Its poker leaning next to the empty mouth like a fork snuggled up to its plate. Excitement zipped through her as she imagined selecting her favourite pieces from the warehouse and catering to tourists. She could imagine the garden filled with sculptures, fountains and seating, customers mingling freely among them.
It's lovely, Tara said.
She had been going over the operating budget. They would probably have to take out a loan to make this second location work. There were still monies in reserve, but at the moment there were no new clients. Although, she could open the shop right away. It was summer, a busy time for tourists. At the least, she could probably generate enough to keep up the rent until they found Johnny or didn't. But that still didn't explain why Danny had kept this from her.
We have to get the lease signed today, or we lose it, Heather said.
I'll sign.
Good. I didn't know how you were going to get that thing out of here.
Tara had no idea what she was talking about until Heather Milton stepped to the side. Behind her, in the farthest corner of the store, was a giant stone slab with a face cut into it. Unlike the male face she'd seen in Carrig's garden, this one had eyelashes. Her mouth dropped open.
Who brought this here? She asked.
Please don't let it be Danny.
It was Heather's turn to look startled. I assumed someone from Irish Revivals did.
Did you see the person who brought this here?
No, I only noticed it the other day.
Her eyes flicked around the space.
To be honest, you were going to get an earful about it if you hadn't signed the lease. I can't have clients breaking into properties.
This item has been missing from our inventory. I don't think it was put here for us. I think someone was trying to hide it from my uncle.
Slowly torturing him, making him think he was crazy, ruining his reputation.
Tara didn't know that for sure. She just didn't like this woman jumping to the worst conclusions.
Did you give an employee of Irish Revivals the key to this shop? I did not.
And you're right. Someone must have broken in.
Heather sighed. It's possible one of my employees was a bit careless with the key.
Careless how?
He gave it away when I was out of the office. Clients are always asking for early access to measure, take photos, plan. If we trust them, we often say yes. He said he didn't realise the contract had yet to be finalised. She gave a tense smile. No harm done, as long as you're taking the space. Tara continued to take in the space. The gorgeous stained glass window high above the fireplace. Intricate flowers and geometric shapes in vibrant colours. Lion's head door knocker. A fire poker. Stained glass window. The granite slab. These were all the missing items Rose had rattled off. She had almost forgotten. The ones that Johnny had been raving about. Oh, Danny, what have you done? Heather Milton's high heels clicked as she walked to the French doors and threw them open. As I thought, Tara inched forward as Heather turned to her. Last time I was here, the previous real estate agent had left the French doors unlocked. That is why the owner should have listed exclusively with me. I'd never be so careless. Anyone could have snuck in, Tara said. It wasn't necessarily Danny, but the items were from the salvage mill. Heather stared at the sculpture.
I just assumed this item belonged to Irish Revivals.
Her gaze fell on Tara.
If it doesn't, I'll make sure to have the owner remove it.
It's ours. Heather looked at the slab as if it was a personal affront.
Hideous, isn't it?
I have a client who's eager for it, Tara said, quite liking it. In a garden, perhaps. If she could get the slab to George O'Malley, maybe she could find out why Carrigmurray was after the theatre light. That had been bothering her. Why sell the light, then be desperate to get it back? George said he had barely had it. Dust hadn't even settled on it yet. It wasn't as if Carrig had his own theatre in which to display it. Desperate was the word he'd used with her. The question was, why?
Yes, I can see it in a garden,
Heather nodded, with the look of a person weary of trying to understand the strange tastes of other people.
Let's zip back to the office and get her done.
Yes, Tara said. But first things first. She stepped toward the French doors and turned the lock with a decisive click. Tara was walking back to the warehouse with a copy of the signed lease in her purse when someone stepped up, blocking her path. Alana stood in front of her, hair tucked into a baseball cap, decked out in a tracksuit.
There you are, Alana said. I have to talk to you.
I'm on my way back to the warehouse, Tara said. Do you want to talk there?
Actually, Alana said, I think we should go to the inn.
The inn? Whatever for? Alana took Tara's arm, whirled her in the other direction, and started walking.
There's something I have to tell you.
I got that already.
Remember when you first checked in and Grace was going to give you room 301?
Yeah. The key flashed before her, blood on the stem.
There wasn't a leak, Alana said, just as the memory came back to Tara.
Okay.
Carrigmurray had stayed in the room the night before and I hadn't had time to clean it.
They entered the inn, and Alana snatched the key to room 301. Why hadn't it been there when Tara tried to get it? She could hardly ask, given the fact that she shouldn't be trying to get her hands on hotel keys that didn't belong to her. They headed up the stairs. Tara tried to glance at the key to see if there was still a red splotch on it, but it was tucked into Alana's palm.
I know you were there when the fisherman pulled something strange out of the bay.
What was it?
Alana asked. Tara wasn't the only one trying to get answers.
The guards have asked me to keep that information private. Rumour has it was the head of the cast iron pig, and that it's the murder weapon.
Again, I can't comment.
I'm just saying that the reason I haven't come forward with this earlier is that I had no idea the wee pig was a murder weapon. Didn't look sinister then. Only a tad strange, but Carrig is a theatre director. He's always been a tad strange.
Why did he stay here that night?
They were almost to the third floor.
I wasn't even on duty,
Alana said.
I'd left one of my school books here, so I was at the desk early to fetch it.
Is that why Grace insisted they were both at the desk that morning?
Okay, and?
Carrig hurried in when Grace was in the kitchen.
He was a mess. Alana stopped at the door to room 301.
A mess? How?
He had streaks of dirt on him and...
She swallowed.
What looked like blood on his shirt.
That would explain the blood on the key.
Did you ask him what it was?
Oh, yeah. He said it was fake blood. That made perfect sense. They're doing Hamlet. I mean, there's a lot of bloodshed in plays by the Bard.
There is indeed.
If Tara knew anything about theatre types, they were night owls, not morning people.
Why was he here so early?
Alana shrugged.
Theatre people have their own way about them. For all I knew, they pulled an all-nighter.
She opened the door. It was neat. Identical to room 305, except the windows overlooked the building next door. There was no one who could see in.
Why did you make up this business about a leak?
What was I supposed to say? Grace would have been on my case about not cleaning it. I'm doing my best balancing cooking school and work and boxing.
Alana went to the dresser and stood in front of it. She turned back to Tara.
I think we're going to need to call the guards. But I need you to promise me something first.
I can't make promises until I know what you're on about.
I just don't want them to know I've known about this for a while, Alana said. I mean, they'll figure out that it was left after Carrig stayed, but can't we just pretend that I just discovered it?
Tara took a step forward, although she was somewhat afraid of what was waiting in that drawer.
Discovered what?
If I get in trouble, me da is never going to let me box again.
Tara pushed past her and opened the dresser drawer. There, sitting on its bottom with hands and legs splayed out, was a cast iron piggy, missing its head, covered in blood. Chapter 20.
This afternoon?
Tara repeated when Alana clicked off her mobile and gave her a look. They were standing outside the inn as if to separate themselves from the grisly discovery in room 301. Alana had just phoned the guards, and apparently they were in no hurry to rush over and investigate. Alana threw up her hands.
That's what they said.
Tara knew they had other cases, but she wanted them to hurry over straight away.
You're going to wait here for them?
Yes. I had to cancel class, but the guards want me here.
When Alana was putting the key to room 301 back into the cubby, Tara was finally able to ascertain that the splotch of red was still visible. If the guards could prove the blood belonged to Emmett, and Alana could prove that Carrig had handled the key, and the rest of the murder weapon was found in room 301, this case was solved. Except for the why. Why on earth would Carrig Murray kill Emmett? Over the granite slab? Had Emmett learned that Carrig was inflating the budget? Was Carrig simply pocketing the extra money? But how would Carrig know that Emmett was at Johnny's cottage? Perhaps Carrig found out Emmett was coming to collect his pig that morning. He could have sent Johnny off to fetch an item. Left the note on the door to the mill only to lie in wait for him at the cottage. Far-fetched for a normal person, perhaps, but Carrig Murray thrived on drama. It was also Carrig who had mentioned the stone slab and warned George O'Malley that Tara would be coming. Had Carrig hidden the stone slab in the retail shop? Why? She didn't have all the answers. Why were the guards going to wait so long to come check it out? What if Carrig somehow got wind of this discovery and skipped town? The Irish grapevine was swift. The stone slab. Tara had the perfect excuse to pop in and visit Carrig Murray. She would let him know she had found the slab.
"Are you going to keep my secret?" Alana said.
"If someone asks me, I'm going to tell the truth," Tara said. "But I don't think the guards are going to go squealing to your father. You didn't know Carrig was doing anything wrong. I can see how you would believe it was fake blood."
Tara reached out and patted Alana's shoulder.
"I've worked too hard to lose my progress," Alana said.
"You're a grown woman," Tara said. "Your father can't stop you from boxing. He can't make you finish cookery school. You made an honest mistake. Believe me, the best thing you can do is tell the whole truth."
Alana nodded, but she still looked ambivalent.
"Do you think I'd be in any trouble for not saying something? Again, you didn't know about the murder, the time of the murder, or the murder weapon until now, right?"
Alana nodded.
"But as soon as you did, you said something. I don't see why you'd be in any trouble."
"Thank you." Alana took an awkward step and then threw her arms around Tara. As soon as the hug was over and Alana was still looking at Tara with fondness, she cut in. "Did you paint Go Home Yankee on the mill?" Red blotches broke out on Alana's pale face.
"I'm sorry," she whispered. "I was such a jerk."
"Where is it now?"
"Where is what?"
"The paint and the can."
"In my room."
"Don't do it again." Tara took off down the footpath.
"Where are you going?"
Alana called after her. She was going straight to the theatre to confront Carrig Murray. She wasn't about to tell Alana that.
"Back to the mill. Call me when the guards are finished."
The red gate at the theatre was standing open, but when she reached the front door, a typed note awaited her. "Rehearsal cancelled due to personal emergency." Tara stopped and stared at it. That was odd. There was no way Carrig could have known Alana had called the guards, was there? She expected the door to the theatre to be locked, but when she pulled on it, it swung open. She headed for the stage. As soon as she crossed the lobby, she knew something was terribly wrong. The red velvet curtain at stage right lay crumpled on the stage, forming a little hill. Tara hurried down the aisle. As she drew closer, she saw an arm and a leg sticking out of the curtain.
"Hello?"
She ran toward it, taking the stairs up to the stage two at a time. Sticking out of the fallen curtain was the handle of a large knife. She threw her hand over her mouth. A large head protruded from underneath the curtain. Carrig Murray, stabbed in the back from behind the curtain. Whoever the killer was, he or she was a coward, preferring not to look his or her victim in the eye. The only time Tara had seen a knife this big was when she watched the juggler on the unicycle. Was that one of his knives? If it was, and if Tara were a detective, she would eliminate him immediately. No one in his right mind would leave such a recognizable knife in a person's back unless they wanted to be arrested for the murder. She didn't notice the business card or the blood until she drew closer. The blood had blended in with the red velvet curtain, his final cloak of death. The shocks kept coming. Lying on top of Carrig's head was a business card. Tara leaned in to read it. "Irish Revivals, Johnny Meehan, owner." Tara gasped and turned away. Her uncle hadn't done this, had he? If he had, he was insane. Taunting the police? Maybe it was him. Everyone said he hadn't been right in the head. She just didn't want to believe it. Her own mother hadn't gotten along with him, and Margaret Meehan's huge heart had welcomed almost everyone into her life. Margaret Meehan had also had a huge brain. She read a lot. She loved the Bard. When other children were being read rhyming books, Tara was getting lulled to sleep by Shakespeare. In Hamlet, Polonius had been stabbed from behind a curtain by Hamlet, although Polonius believed it was Claudius spying on him. Was this one of his cast members? Was it Hamlet? Had she come in early, stabbed him, and then put the sign on the door? What on earth would be her motive? She was the one who said Carrick had given her the role of a lifetime and she'd do anything for him. Someone was keen to throw suspicion on everyone and anyone. Why leave Johnny's business card? Another attempt to throw off suspicion? She stared at the card. All it would take to make it disappear would be to lean over the body and gently pluck it up with her fingertips. This was an older theatre. It probably wasn't decked out with surveillance cameras. To leave the card or take the card? That is the question. Whether 'tis nobler to be honest. Stop. Of course she wasn't going to mess with a crime scene, even if she suspected the crime scene had been deliberately doctored to make Johnny Meehan look guilty. Again. She backed away slowly, clutching her cell phone, and raced up the aisle, waiting until she burst through the entrance doors and was outside to call the guards. She hesitated just a second, knowing what she had to do, but dreading it. It wouldn't look good. Her discovering the second body. Couldn't she just wait for someone else to find him? Couldn't she just say she had come by but turned away when she saw the sign on the door? Why did she open the door at all? They were also going to find out that Alana had just told her about Carrick Murray staying at the inn and leaving behind the body of the pig, the first murder weapon. Yet instead of minding her own business, Tara had gone straight to the theatre. That probably wasn't going to sit well either. At this point, it was looking like the best scenario was that Johnny Meehan was in fact the killer. Otherwise, the killer could be anyone, and she was going to be under an intense spotlight. For a second, all she wanted to do was board a plane back to New York. Enough. Another man had been murdered. She braced herself to be a suspect again, not to mention a target of gossip, and called 999. She called the inn while she waited for the guards.
The Bay Inn, how may I help you?
Tara was relieved when Alana answered right away. This is Tara. Something awful has happened.
What?
Nobody knows yet. The guards are on their way. You have to promise.
I promise.
I came to the theatre to find Carrick.
Oh, Jesus, why'd you do that?
Just wait.
You didn't tell him what I'd found, did you?
No.
You didn't tell him I called the guards?
Her voice was laced with panic.
Listen to me. I can't believe you. He's dead.
Finally, there was a moment of silence.
You're joking me.
No. He's lying face down on the stage. There's a lot of blood. Tara wasn't going to mention the knife.
Oh, my God.
I called the guards. Going to look bad that I'm the one who found him, but it will be even worse if
they knew you were just here and learned that Carrick had been hiding the murder weapon and you went to confront him.
Tara sighed.
This was bad.
Yes.
Does that mean Carrick is not the murderer? Or did Carrick kill Emmett and we have two murderers running around the city?
I honestly don't know.
I won't mention you were here, Alana said. As long as you keep my confidences as well.
I'm not going to lie, Tara said. And neither are you.
However, we should only answer the questions they think to ask, not the ones they don't.
Tara hesitated. That was exactly what she meant. Was it a mistake?
Yes, she sighed. Do we agree?
We do. Tara hung up. She glanced past the red gates where a guard car was pulling up. Sergeant Gable got out, slamming the door, already glaring at her. Tara had to remind herself that she had done nothing wrong. It didn't help to quell her nerves. Detective Gable walked up to her, flanked by two other guards. He stopped, hands on hips. He glanced at the theatre door.
"You're saying that Carrick Murray is inside?" he pointed. "And he's dead?"
Tara swallowed and nodded.
"Stabbed," she said. "In the back."
His eyes turned to angry slits.
"What are you doing here?"
"Carrick asked me to be on the lookout for an item he wanted. It's a stone sculpture, a granite slab."
She was rambling.
"I was coming to tell him I'd found it."
Gable shook his head.
"Dead bodies seem to follow you around."
"Please don't even joke about it,"
Tara replied.
"I'm traumatized."
He bowed his head, then nodded. He put on gloves and Tara watched as the other two did the same. They headed for the door.
"Don't leave town,"
Gable called out without turning around. Tara scrambled away before he found Johnny Meehan's business card at the scene. Chapter 21. Rose was the only person Tara could think of who would understand the horror of what she just witnessed. She had to tell someone besides Alana. Keeping it bottled in was not healthy. She had loved to have friend time with Brianna, but that wasn't smart given where she was employed. Danny came to mind, of course, but when she saw him, she'd have to confront him about renting the retail space behind her back, not to mention stealing and storing items there. And she still hadn't worked out all the possible implications of those actions. What if he was trying to steal the business out from under Johnny, and now her? He had seemed like the only man in town who cared about Johnny, but what if that was just an act? What if all his Irish charm was actually deadly? She had two missed calls from him. She would call him back when she figured out what she was going to say. She jumped on her bicycle and rode to the caravan. Just as she reached it, she saw Rose hopping on a black bicycle and wheeling down the street along the bay. Tara wondered where she was going. It was a natural instinct to follow Rose. She told herself it was out of a sense of duty. Once she caught up to Rose, she would tell her that Carrick had been murdered. She would warn her that if she was in touch with Johnny, he could be a killer. Or did she already know that? Was she an accomplice? The terrain grew bumpier. The houses and businesses were farther apart. The bay spread out before her. Rose was still ahead, pedaling away without a single glance behind her. When she turned off onto a narrow street, Tara hung back until she could barely see Rose's black hair flying straight behind her. Tara took the street, keeping up just enough so she could see which way Rose would go. Rose finally stopped at a stone building in a field set back off the road. There were no other homes or businesses flanking it, and no sign above the door to indicate what kind of business it was, or used to be. The doors and windows were dark. There was a chain across the front door. Rose hopped off her bicycle and walked it down the stone passageway that hugged the side of the building. She parked the bicycle behind a rubbish bin and disappeared down a set of stairs. Tara parked her bicycle across the street, then hurried over just in time to hear a door slamming and then the sound of a lock being turned. Darn it. Now what? They wouldn't answer a knock on the door, would they? Was she going to have to wait until Rose came back out? Tara hugged the side of the building and inched her way toward the stairwell. There were only six steps. She bounded down them, then tried the door. Just as she suspected, it was locked. Tara sat down on the steps and waited. The door opened with a screech and Rose exited. It took her two steps before she looked up to find Tara. Rose screamed.
"What's the matter?"
The male voice came from inside the building. And then, there he was, A man with black hair and blue eyes like her, tall and broad in his 60s, and there was no mistaking it, he was her mother's brother. He came to a dead stop when he saw Tara, and she saw the same instant recognition in his eyes. She was shocked to see tears come into his eyes.
"Margaret's daughter," he said.
Unexpected grief clogged Tara's throat. She could barely manage a nod. Johnny Meehan hung his head for a moment, then looked up again.
"I'm so sorry."
"She was too," Tara said. "She wanted you to know she forgave you. She wishes things hadn't turned out this way." He nodded.
"We can't talk out here in the open," Rose said.
"Come on."
Johnny turned and headed back into the building. Tara didn't hesitate to follow. She had looked into his eyes and had seen a family member. She was not afraid of him. If he had murdered others, she would turn him in. But she was going to speak with him first. Tara found herself in the middle of a storage room, damp, with a moldy smell. In the corner were several overturned wooden crates that Johnny seemed to be using as a chair and table. He was huddled there now. His beard was scraggly and his eyes bloodshot.
"What is this place?" Tara said.
"Used to be a pub in front.
This was the storage room."
"Right."
That explained the scent of yeast lingering amongst the mould. Johnny headed for one of the crates. His back had a curve to it, as if it hurt to stand up straight, and he was walking with a limp. He sat down and motioned for her to sit on the other crate. Rose leaned against a wall, giving them some space.
"Look at you," he said.
"You're a lovely vision."
His voice was thick. He swallowed.
"I wish I could offer you a cup of tea."
Tara offered a soft smile.
"It's the thought that counts."
She took a deep breath.
"Did you hear about my mother?"
He maintained eye contact and nodded. His vulnerability was etched in his face, in the shaking of his hands. She had an urge to care for him, protect him. She had to remind herself he could be a killer.
"I'm in a bit of a mess."
"I've heard."
"I told him you moved into the cottage,"
Rose said.
"Oh."
Tara slapped her forehead.
"I did, I'm sorry. I should have..." "Oh, no, pet. What's mine is yours."
"It's been professionally cleaned and..." She stopped. Now was not the time to talk about her decorating ideas.
"I'm so sorry about the mess," Johnny said. "I'm ashamed."
Rose approached and set a canvas bag by Johnny's feet.
"There's your supper."
"I'm away."
She turned and headed for the door without another glance at either of them. Once it was closed, they were in the dark.
"Is there a light?" Tara said.
"It's by the door,"
Johnny said.
"Will it attract attention?"
She felt silly asking, because there were no windows. But there must be some reason they were here in the dark.
"I'm sorry. It hurts my eyes," Johnny said.
He bent over, and a minute later a small lantern illuminated the space just enough to see his face. It struck her that she could be in here in the dark with a murderer. But she didn't feel afraid. Was she naive, or was that the power of family? Of course he could be both family and a murderer. But that's not how she felt in her gut. If she was wrong, she would certainly pay the price. Johnny clasped his hands and leaned forward.
"It's not safe for you here."
"I wasn't followed," Tara said. "I checked. and I hid my bicycle.
I don't mean here. I mean in Galway. It's not safe yet.
You saw who killed Emmett, didn't you?
Johnny bowed his head.
I saw Emmett all right, lying dead in me doorway.
He crossed himself.
It was a message to me.
Is that why the body had been dragged to the doorway?
What kind of a message?
If I come back, I'll be arrested for murder. Whoever did this wants me gone.
Tara didn't know whether or not he was withholding information. If he had seen the murderer, would he tell her? Or was he trying to protect her? The burdens and bonds of family love were so very complicated.
Why haven't you gone to the police?
He was killed in me doorway with a cast iron pig that has my fingerprints all over it.
Wait, you saw the murder weapon?
Of course I did. It was lying right next to his poor head.
Johnny put his head in his hands and moaned. It wasn't next to the body when the guards went in.
If Johnny was telling the truth, it meant someone came back for it.
The killer?
Why did you write my name on the wall?
Johnny's head snapped up.
What are you on about?
My name was written on the back wall in blood.
Johnny stood.
He took a step and stumbled.
My God.
He shook his head.
We never saw that.
You didn't write it?
Me? Of course not. What a thing to do.
I noticed you were walking with a limp. What happened?
Running away from the cottage, I slipped on the grass, lost me hat.
Hound found it. The guards have it now.
Johnny perked up.
How is Hound?
He's fine. Danny and I are taking care of him.
Johnny nodded his thanks.
The killer came back,
he said, almost a whisper, mostly to himself.
Come with me to the guards, Tara said.
They won't believe me. I'll go to prison for the rest of me life,
he turned.
I'd rather die.
Who do you think did this?
The question is,
will this end with Carrig Murray?
Johnny stood and began pacing along the back wall. He must have been doing a lot of that lately. Tara could not imagine hiding out in this place for so long. She was already itching to get out. Ironically, it would be even worse in prison, and that's why Johnny was here. Only a fool thought that innocent people didn't go to prison. But hiding from the truth, especially when there was a murderer out there? How could that be justified?
One thing was obvious. Rose knew about Carrig's murder, and she had ridden off to tell Johnny straight away.
Why do you think Carrig was killed?
He and Ben Kelly were in cahoots. This was all about driving me out of the salvage mill for good.
He took a step toward Tara. She stood. He grabbed her hands.
Please, I can't have you in danger. I can't. You have to leave today, right now.
No, I want to help you.
My time is coming. I can feel it. It's too late for me.
He withdrew his hands.
Whoever killed Carrig is a fan of Shakespeare.
Rose said you were investigating. Please don't.
Go back to America.
Enough.
I've heard go back to America in one form or another from almost every Irishman and woman I've met. I'm going to figure out who is doing this. We're going to have a long talk about family matters and then I'll decide whether or not I'm going back to America. But you're a fugitive, and just being here makes me an accomplice. I have to call the guards.
I won't stop you,
Johnny said.
I wouldn't be wanting you messed up in this now.
She reached into her bag. Her cell phone was gone. Rose.
Rose took my phone.
Tara didn't normally swear, but the fact that the fortune teller had played her really stoked her temper. She let out a string of colourful words. There was silence. Johnny's deep laugh rumbled out.
What?
I wasn't sure you were your mother's daughter, Johnny said. Until just now.
The killer came back. The thought kept circling through her head as she pedalled for the Garda station. By the time they arrived at Johnny's hiding place, he would be long gone. She knew it. Rose knew it. And Johnny knew it. Would they believe that her phone had been stolen? Since she couldn't control what the guards said or did, she went back to mulling over the case. The killer came back to get rid of the murder weapon. He or she had either panicked and had forgotten to take it as he or she fled, or someone had interrupted him or her, forcing a return to the scene. She knew killers often returned to the scene of the crime, but not when the body hadn't even been discovered. Wasn't that too great of a risk? When the killer returned, he or she also wrote Tara's name on the wall in Emmett's blood. That meant the killer must have come back after Tara arrived in Ireland, but before Tara discovered Emmett's body. There was no other explanation for her name to be on the wall. This could be an exciting development. Where would Johnny run next? Tara couldn't blame him. Emmett Walsh had been a wealthy and influential man, and his death would not go unpunished, even if they punished the wrong man. Up ahead, the road twisted into a narrow curve. Tara couldn't imagine how cars had enough room to pass each other, and just as she had the thought, there was a car behind her. So close she could feel the heat from the engine and a whisper of hot air on her ankles. She was on the edge of a steep, rocky slope. It was too low to call it a cliff, yet there was a steep drop to the bay. If she took a tumble, it could kill her. There was nowhere for her to go. She kept her bicycle steady, waiting for the car to pass. She turned to look and got a glimpse of a dark hood, oversized sunglasses, and a black bandana. Tara screamed. The driver gunned the engine and the car cut to the right just enough to bump her leg. I just got hit by a car! The bike tipped over, and although her brain was screaming, it was too late for her body to react. Immediately, she and her bicycle were airborne, falling over the rocky side, her screams lost in the wind. The driver accelerated and screeched away. She let go of the handlebars of the bike, and soon it was falling away from her, bouncing against the rocks, her body sailing past it. She was falling too fast to think, but then there was a tree, with a branch sticking out like a gnarled arm. Tara reached with both hands until she was grasping bark, hanging onto the branch with all her strength. For a second, she didn't do anything but squeeze tight and breathe. Calm down. This is life or death. Just hold on. She took one more gulp of air and looked down. Jagged rocks weren't her biggest fear. It was the road below. Cars bouncing over her red bicycle, mangling it to bits until they could come to a stop. Cars swerved and horns honked. Please don't let it cause an accident. She would rather suffer injuries or death herself than have an innocent motorist die because of this. If she let go, that would be it for her. If the fall didn't kill her, a car would. Her fingers started to grow slick with fear. She held on, mouthing prayers, her sweaty fingers the only thing between her and plummeting to her death. Inch by inch, she slid across the branch. She suddenly saw Thomas in her mind's eye. He had died from a fall. Should she just let go? It would be so nice to be with him again. Hold on. She felt as if she could hear his voice, clear as day. He would be with her ma'am now. And they would want her to survive. It took all her focus and what felt like a very long time, but soon she reached the trunk of the tree. She wrapped herself around it and slowly slid down. She was so happy to reach the bottom, she let go too fast. She was still trembling with fear, and soon she was rolling down the rest of the rocky incline, large stones cutting into her as her body picked up speed. She felt a deep scrape on her side and then wetness spread through her. She was bleeding. She hit the bottom, near the road, just managing to land short of a passing car. She crawled to the safest edge
and waited to flag down any vehicle that would stop.
A dark hood, sunglasses, and a bandana.
Detective Sergeant Gable stared at Tara, still in the hospital bed, despite insisting she was fine. A sharp boulder had sliced her side, and she had 7 stitches, and more scrapes and bruises than she could count. But she would heal.
Yes, but no make or model of the car.
That's correct. I was too close to it, and right after I saw that hood, I fell.
Where were you coming from again?
He was asking her everything twice, trying to catch her in a lie. I saw Rose.
Rose Byrne?
The fortune teller.
Rose Byrne, Johnny Meehan's other half, isn't she?
They're not married, and I'm no authority on his romantic life. She wished he would stop interrupting so she could finish her story.
Go on.
I saw Rose Byrne heading off on her bicycle, and I followed her.
I need to know exactly where she went.
And I already told you. I might be able to find it if you drove me there, but I wasn't looking at street signs. It was an abandoned stone building about 20 minutes from town. Johnny said it used to be a pub. Gable shook his head.
You could have caused a serious accident.
If he knew the building, he wasn't going to let her know.
Excuse me? Your bike landed in the middle of a busy road. You're lucky no one was killed. I'm lucky I wasn't killed.
Tara was yelling now, and she didn't care.
Why do you think this hood tried to run you off the road? How would I know? You wouldn't be going around accusing the people of my city of murder, would you now? Is that your working theory?
Tara swung her legs over the bed and spotted her clothing on the chair behind Sergeant Gable. She pointed.
You can either hand those to me and leave, or I'll jump off this bed with my backside hanging out and get dressed in front of you. Your choice.
He glared at her, and she glared back.
When are they releasing you?
This afternoon.
You don't suppose Johnny is just going to wait for us to show up in his little hidey hole?
No, I don't suppose he will.
And you're certain that Rose stole your mobile phone?
I know I had it in my purse when I went in, and it was gone when I reached for it a few minutes later.
I'll pay you a visit at the mill tomorrow morning, he said. Maybe something will shake loose by then.
In the meantime, if I hear about you going around and chatting up any more folks in this town about your uncle or anything related to my case, I'll have you arrested for interfering with an ongoing investigation. I've taken over my uncle's business until he gets back. I'm only talking to people about items they are looking for or items they might have for sale.
Not anymore, you're not.
You can't stop me from conducting business.
Watch me.
He tipped his hat and was gone. Chapter 22. Tara just wanted a scone as big as her head, a mug of coffee, and to her surprise, Hound. She wanted his comforting presence by her side, his gentle whine. She wanted to sit and drink her coffee and eat her scone and touch a dog while she gazed out at the bay. She had almost died. It wasn't the big dreams she wanted now, success as a designer or lavish homes or trips. It was the little things, the miraculous every day, the things she often took for granted. And Danny. If she was honest with herself, she wanted to see Danny's smiling face, hear him say something sarcastic, and find out once and for all whether she could trust him. She so wanted to trust him. She took a taxi from the hospital and had the driver drop her off a little ways from the mill so that she could walk along the water and breathe. Listen to the birds cry overhead, hear the lap of the water.
When she reached the door of the mill, she felt a tug of happiness. That is, until she saw something tacked to the door. Make that two somethings. There were two official-looking sheets of paper nailed to the door. What now? More threats? She drew closer and saw that the two notices were from the city. Final notice of violation. Notice to evacuate the premises. Final notice of violation? How many had Johnny received? What had he done with them? Didn't they own this building? Was there a loan out on it? Tara reached for her purse to call Danny when she remembered. Her phone was gone. She was going to have to buy a new one. Danny hadn't visited her in hospital. Had he tried to call her? He had to know what had happened to her by now. She couldn't worry about her relationships. She needed a lawyer. She stood in Johnny's tiny office, worried about what to do. If he had received other notices, he hadn't kept them. The notices were full of legalese. She had 30 days to pay a €10,000 fine for the violations. €10,000. That was impossible and ridiculous. For the evacuation, she also had 30 days to restore the account to good standing. What did that mean? Who did Johnny owe, and how much? She didn't suppose there was any chance Johnny hadn't run again, that he was now in the custody of the Gardaí, where she could visit him and help him and get to the bottom of this. No, he would have run. He said he'd rather die. Ben Kelly was behind this. He had to be. She had half a mind to storm over to his place. First, she was going to get her darn scone and coffee and make sure Hound was okay. The elation she'd felt at being alive and the miracle of the everyday was already being replaced with annoyance. This was life. A fragile balance of yin and yang, dark and light. If only the light would last longer. The cafe was busy and welcoming. Tara loved all the sounds, plates clinking, bells tinkling, customers chatting. The smells of breakfast were as comforting as sliding into a warm pair of slippers on a cold morning. Maybe they would let her move in. She could sit at the table near the window, use the restroom when needed, and take naps under the table in between meals. She would sit here until the murderer was caught, and the people of Galway accepted her as one of them. She would eat her weight in scones and have coffee running through her veins. "Hello, love," the woman sang. "Coffee?" Tara wondered if ambushing the woman in a hug and breaking into tears would seem out of the norm. She smiled instead. "And a scone, please. Headed off to Carrickmurray's funeral, are you?" Oh, was that where everyone was? No one had told her about it. "Yes," she said. She glanced left and right and then leaned in. "But I'm so embarrassed."
"What's wrong, love?"
"I forgot which funeral home."
"Mass is at noon. Then they're booking tradition and having his funeral at the theatre. He had it all scripted, if you can believe that."
Tara could believe it. For a second, Carrick's larger-than-life figure loomed in front of her, immediately followed by an image of the knife in his back. "It's still such a shock."
"I would have thought it was one of the actors who done it," the woman said. "But others are saying we've got a serial killer on the loose."
A serial killer? Or a killer forced to kill again to cover his or her tracks? "What time is the service again?" Tara asked. The woman glanced at the clock.
"I'd say it's already started."
The actors all wore long black robes. There was a small choir that sang and echoed sentiments. The weather was mild, so it was held in the back garden as Carrig had requested. Tara soon learned there was no need for a burial, for the guards still had his body. A murder investigation and autopsy took time. But before all the actors flew home, they were going to have the send-off that Carrig had morbidly planned some time ago, just in case. Standing here in the black dress she had planned on wearing for her mother's send-off, she realized her mother had been right. Funerals are for the living. Although in this case it was clear Carrig's ghost was hovering around, trying to direct the action. She had missed the mass, and more prayers by the priest in the garden, and by the time the choir finished, the service was done. The crowd was headed to O'Doul's for an informal wake. She found Danny in the crowd standing next to a woman in a black dress so short it looked as if she were going to a cocktail party. Tara had no idea until the woman turned around that it was Alana. Her hair was down and straightened, her makeup just so. She was holding on to Hamlet's arm. The young actress looked equally stunning in her little black dress. Danny caught Tara's eye, extricated himself from the pair and headed her way. Concern was stamped on his handsome face. Danny took Tara's arm and steered her to a private corner.
Are you okay?
Oh, Tara said. You heard?
I came to the hospital.
Funny, I didn't see you there. That came out way too bitter.
The guards were questioning you, Danny said. They wouldn't let me in.
She bit her lip and nodded. It wasn't his fault, and Carrig's funeral wasn't the right place to get into any of her probing questions. Questions like, did you open a retail shop behind my uncle's back? Have you been plotting to take over the company?
Did you get a look at the driver?
He asked. I told the police everything I could, Tara said. Until she knew who she could trust, she needed to leave everything as vague as possible.
Rumour is he was wearing some kind of a mask.
Not exactly a mask, Tara said. I don't want to talk about it here.
I'm sorry.
He placed his hand on her lower back. She wanted to lean into him. Instead, she pulled away.
I won't grill you, Danny said. But you don't look like everything is all right. I want to help.
Tara removed the violation and eviction notices from her handbag and handed them to him. He looked them over, then gave a low whistle.
He must have received other violations, Tara said. Did you ever see any?
No, Danny said.
He kept this to himself. What about his office?
I didn't find a single one.
Leave these to me.
Danny tucked the notices into the inside pocket of his suit jacket.
There's a solicitor we've used a couple of times. I'll have a word with him.
Can you set up an official meeting for the two of us? Tara asked. I'd like to be there.
Of course.
The notice says 30 days to respond.
I'll call him after the wake.
Would he be drunk then? Tara stopped herself from asking. Danny touched her wrist. She turned.
You could have been killed.
Were you really at the hospital?
It slipped out before she could catch herself.
Danny squeezed her hand.
Of course I was.
Gable wouldn't let me in. I waited in the lobby. By the time I checked with them again, they said you had been discharged. I called you several times. You never called back.
I lost my cell phone before the accident. It was stolen by Rose Byrne, who was also hiding my uncle. I met him. I don't think he's guilty. There were so many things she wanted to tell him.
What happened?
I'm gonna need a drink. Lucky for you, that's what wakes are all about.
Carrig had a lot of theatrical friends, and that included musicians. A trad band was playing jaunty tunes when Tara and Danny walked in. She spotted Ben Kelly at the bar, and to Tara's surprise, he was speaking with Grace Quinn.
I think he has something to do with the eviction notice, Tara said.
That's probably true, but don't confront him here. Despite the drinking and the crack, this is still a wake.
You'll cause a much bigger stir if you try to turn it into an interrogation.
I won't, I swear.
He handed her a pint.
Drink this.
She was drunk and having a good time, dancing with Danny O'Donnell, lifting her pint every time someone made a toast to say something nice about Carrig Murray, singing when they sang. It was a celebration of his life.
Before she knew it, she was weeping, and Danny had his arm around her.
I was going to do this for my mom when I found my uncle.
There, there. He kissed her cheek.
It was going to be so lovely. I imagined everyone standing by the water with roses. I had a speech.
Her own speech, the sober part of her brain noted, was slurred.
It would have been beautiful.
You can arrange one later.
Yes, I will. I will do that if only Johnny had come out of that miserable hidey hole.
She heard herself say it and she froze. Too much alcohol. Maybe he didn't hear her. What did you just say? His pint was down, his eyes were alert and pinned to hers.
I'm drunk,
she said. What hidey hole?
It's an expression. You don't have that expression here.
I think I should get you home, Danny said. He looked around. The pub was mobbed.
I'm having a good time.
She heard the words come out of her mouth and gasped. What kind of person had a good time at a funeral? It wasn't her fault. It was this darn Irish culture. The music, the drinks, the toasts.
I don't mean I'm having a good time, she faltered. I just mean I don't want to go home.
You're in no state to be here. You have to be very careful about what you say, who you say it to.
It was just an expression in his hidey hole. It means missing and presumed to be hiding out somewhere. I don't know where. He might not be miserable at all. He could be anywhere.
Where did you go on that bike of yours?
Just for a ride.
He was asking her the same questions the guards asked her. Let's get out of here.
I want a hound.
Maybe he's back at the cottage. Danny stood. Tara grabbed his arm and pulled him back down.
I didn't get a chance to question Ben Kelly.
This is not the time or the place.
Some of the actors, they had been working out at Kelly's gym.
Practicing for the fencing scenes?
Exactly.
Tara hit Danny. He rubbed his arm. She laughed.
Do you get what I'm saying? The hood?
It looked just like the hoods the actors were wearing.
You're Langard, Danny said. I don't even think you get what you're saying. That's why I'm taking you home.
Ben Kelly could have learned a bit about Shakespeare from them.
Tara knew it was no mistake that Carrig had been stabbed from behind a curtain just like Polonius was stabbed from behind a tapestry by Hamlet. Could it be the actress who played Hamlet? What on earth would be her motive? Tara remembered her